Yes, indeed. That's the sound of beautiful ocean waves breaking on the shore that you hear. I'm not actually near the ocean. I'm in it. I'm standing in almost waist-deep water here at Rocky Bay, Magnetic Island, Queensland. This is Jeff Weberson. This is On the Brink Radio's very special report in honor of World Ocean Day tomorrow. On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 204. Welcome. I'd like to begin this show by first thanking my beautiful friend, Jaya Earthchild of Hobart, Tasmania. She's been letting me borrow her very sweet little Vixia sort of miniature video camera for the past few months, and this has made it very easier for me to record video and audio in remote locations, and much easier to carry it on my bicycle to go down to the places where I am now, as opposed to carrying my big sort of dinosaurian Sony mini DV tape camera. Thanks, Jaya. And as soon as she gets her camera back, she's going to be recording a brand new song that she's been working on about the Great Barrier Reef, which coincidentally is, I'm basically at the edge of the Great Barrier Reef right now. But tomorrow is the annual World Ocean Day, and it's probably something concocted by the United Nations and that kind of thing. But to me, just like for me, every day is Christmas, every day is Earth Day, every day is World Ocean Day for me. I try to go swimming in the ocean every day if I can, and I've been so lucky during my past few weeks on Magnetic Island here, or as the Walgoodoo Kapa people call it, Yunbanu. It's become my very favorite beach in Australia. I've been able to swim here at least once a day, every day for the past several weeks. Yesterday morning, I even came here before sunrise. So it's a very special place. Right now, the tide is pretty low, but I've got beautiful warm sunshine on my back, even though it's 2 weeks before the winter solstice. It's probably about 28 degrees centigrade, or maybe 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Very beautiful. This show is along the lines of the majority of shows that I've had since 2012 with On the Brink Radio. And again, I'd like to thank Jewel Stanley at UCY-TV for her ongoing work and support. Most of my shows have been about issues related to the whales and dolphins and the health of Mother Ocean. And I'll mention a few basic sort of general ideas about Mother Ocean here in the beginning. But the majority of the show is going to be in honor of 10 Kaitiakis Moana. That means guardians of the ocean. Kaitiaki is a Maori name that means guardian, and Moana means ocean, same in the Polynesian Hawaiian language. These are 10 people, most of whom are alive now, and most of whom I personally know, who have done and are doing the most relevant and important and real work on behalf of Mother Ocean and all of her life. Work, research, and activism that really matters, that's making real contributions, that makes a difference, not just gratuitous social media, let's pretend like we're saving this or that, that kind of thing, because there's heaps of that out there. And because I'm using English, which is a symbolic language used by humans, I am constrained by the limits of this medium. And since, unlike with a visual image, I can't convey all this information at once, I'm forced to delineate the names of these people in a linear sequence. But this sequence does not reflect the importance or significance of these people to me, or as how I see their work. They're all pretty equal. It's just that I can't say all of their names at once. And I guess I could do it alphabetically, but I was probably going to do it in the order of sort of the people that have been around the longest. But first, I'd like to just observe that if you look at my blog, Synthesons, and I'll put the link in my blog posting for the show, there's a chapter from a really brilliant book called The Lure of the Dolphin by Robin Brown in the late 1970s. And this is the last chapter of the book, and it's called Coda. And what it is, it's basically his interpretation of what the dolphins would say to us if they were able to speak English. And again, it's not about the exact words, but about the meaning of what they would convey. And first, they contrast the difference between living on land and living in the ocean. And not just the fact that they're relatively free from gravity, but in terms of the surface area of the Earth is approximately 197 million square miles, of which 139 million square miles is water. This is just the surface area, so that's a very big percentage, 70 or more percent. But because the dolphins aren't constrained to the surface, they are able to access the entire three-dimensional cubic volume of the ocean, and that's where their available territory expands exponentially beyond us strictly surface-limited beings. We can go up in the air a little bit and down in the ocean, but not without external technology. The average depth of the ocean is over 12,000 feet. But the cubic volume of the ocean is, get this, 331 million cubic miles. That is a lot of water. But yet, the whales and dolphins and pretty much all the beings that live in the ocean can theoretically go anywhere in that at any time. So that's why Robin Brown says that one of the biggest differences between the whales and dolphins' sociocultural and behavioral repertoire and why they're mammals, but they're so different from us, is that they don't really have the concept of territory. I mean, along with many other things, they don't have like toothpaste and shoes and napkins and toilet paper. But they don't have territory. They sort of, I mean, who knows how they think of where they live. But they certainly don't divide up territory. They don't have a piece of ocean that they where they stand their ground. And they might have areas where they tend to hang out. But I don't know if you know, that's probably not totally true. But there might maybe, you know, crabs and organisms that live down at the bottom that'll defend the little area where they have. But in general, the free-roaming pelagic marine mammals and fish and stuff probably really don't have the concept of territory. I hesitate to guess how many species of life are known to exist in the ocean, but it would probably be tens of thousands. But I do know that there's approximately 90 different species of whales and dolphins, the cetaceans. I've just been reading a document by the U.S. Navy, which is kind of like a justification for their new budget, and their new CATCH acronym is called Maritime Domain Awareness. And it's obviously a subset of the whole full spectrum dominance paradigm. But it's just very interesting how they basically sum up the way that the whole modern Western world looks at the ocean. They don't see Mother Ocean as a fellow being. They don't see all the beings that live in the ocean as fellow beings. They see them as resources, or possibly, at best, animals and plants to be conserved. That's another good one that goes along with robust, is conserving something. It's almost just as abstract as the concept of saving something. Like, we're going to save the whales, we're going to save the dolphins. I still don't really understand what that means. I think the implication is that people intend, or they think that they're taking action somehow, or paying someone else to take action to protect something, but to save it doesn't really make sense. But in the world of today, save and also tell. You know, like you see this in mass media, social media a lot, it goes like, save the whales, or tell the evil oil companies that they're destroying the life of the whales. But the translation of save and tell in that context, it really means give us money, give donations to our organization, Greenpeace or whoever, and we'll save the whales and tell the politicians and the oil companies, we'll do that for you. I just don't buy into that whole way of doing things. I've been reading a very interesting book lately. It's called The Deep Hot Biosphere by an astronomer named Thomas Gold. I believe he's dead now, but he was a very, very, very major figure. He was, I believe, head of the astronomy department at Cornell University. And this will tell you how big of a bigwig he was. He actually hired Carl Sagan. He gave Carl Sagan his first job as an astronomer on the staff of Cornell there back in probably the 1950s or 1960s. Anyway, he's sort of a renegade mind that has invaded other scientific disciplines and solved very perplexing problems in all of these disciplines, often pissing off a lot of people because he overturned their apple cart by figuring stuff out that they had never been able to figure out or that they didn't want to deal with. And he's almost all the time been right. But this book, I strongly recommend it, The Depot Biosphere, because it's about the idea that life originally originated not even in the ocean, but down deep in the crust of the earth, in the crevices between the rocks, tiny little microbes that don't need sunlight and didn't need photosynthesis, that they actually derived their energy from the hydrocarbons, and this is another important part of this book, from the hydrocarbons that are created from geochemical processes deep, deep, deep down in the Earth's mantle. This is the whole abiogenic hydrocarbon idea that Russian scientists have known for many, many, many decades. Now I'll begin by talking about these 10 Kaitiakis Moana. First, I'm going to start with Dr. Roger Payne. He's the guy, he and Ian Kerr founded an organization called Ocean Alliance back in the 1970s, which I consider to be one of, if not the top, true fair dinkum oceanic research organizations in the world. And they've been really nice to me. They consider me to be their Southern Hemisphere correspondent. Roger Payne, the thing that I think he's most famous for is that in the early 1970s, he and another scientist friend named Scott McVeigh were out in boats studying humpback whale songs. But back then they weren't called songs. They were just called their noises or their sounds. But both of them being musicians, I think Roger Payne plays cello and Scott McVeigh another instrument, but they recognized the sounds of the humpback whales as being songs or music. So this was a very, very important recognition and resulted in a very interesting paper published in Nature magazine in 1973. So I'd like to thank Dr. Roger Payne for his brilliant work of many, many decades of working on behalf of the whales and dolphins. And another thing that Ocean Alliance has done is to conduct a 5-year global survey of ocean toxicity in their sailboat research yacht Odyssey back from like 2005 to 2010. And then they went down and did 2 or more studies of what's happened in the Gulf of Mexico in the wake of the BP oil spill disaster. But this is truly very important work. Right now, I'd like to also mention as number 2, Ian Kerr, Dr. Ian Kerr, who also co-founded Ocean Alliance with Roger Payne. Now, Ian, I've interviewed him on my radio show last year. And tomorrow, his wife Amy just sent a message and said that he has been invited to speak at the World Ocean Day ceremony at the United Nations with all these really big wig people. And it's Dr. Sylvia Earle is going to be talking there along with James Cameron, the movie-making dude from New Zealand. And so this is a really big, important event for them. They've been using these drones called snotbots to collect exhaled mucus samples from whales in several different areas, Argentina, Alaska, I'm not sure where else. And then they're going to study these mucus samples to see what the hormone levels tell them about the stress levels of the whales. So this could be very interesting. Ocean Alliance used to work with Dr. John Wise, who I'm also trying to line up to do an interview with. He's a genetic toxicologist in Louisville, Kentucky now. Number 3, I'll mention Dr. Sylvia Earle. Now, I don't really know all that much about her, but she is a major oceanic bigwig type person. The thing I know best about her is a couple of years ago, she came out with this really cool article about why she's been a vegetarian, if not even a vegan, for decades, and why she doesn't eat fish. And it's a brilliant comprehensive look at the whole concept of why. Of course, she doesn't have to explain why fish is meat, but she explains why we shouldn't be eating fish or really anything from the ocean for that matter for several different reasons, and I think that's a brilliant idea. I'd like to mention who is now Dr. Wally Franklin of the Byron Bay area in New South Wales and his organization called the Oceania Project. Wally and his wife Trish and their son Mark have been doing very remarkable work with the humpback whales there on the east coast of Australia for decades. And I did an interview with Wally 2 years ago. He's a really fantastic person. They've done some amazing recordings of the humpback whales there at Harvey Bay every year. How about the name Jacques Cousteau? Now everybody knows who he was. He was the French guy, and his son and sons and daughter, I think one of his sons died in an accident somehow. His other son, Philippe, and his daughter are sort of carrying on his tradition. But I remember seeing his shows on TV when I was a kid. John Denver, the musician, did a really cool song called The Calypso about Jacques Cousteau's research vessel. But he did lots of, he brought the underwater biosphere to the homes of probably tens or hundreds of millions of people because of his television shows. As I understand it, the legendary Sir Peter Blake of New Zealand, who he was a skipper of the yacht that won the America's Cup a couple of times, but then he, because of his travels around the world, he had seen so much environmental damage being done that he devoted the rest of his life to trying to ameliorate and study this environmental damage. And he, I believe, bought this very special boat that had Jacques Cousteau had built. That it was a boat with a retractable rudder that was able to go up river mouths into very, very shallow water. And it was on this boat they were doing a sting operation up in the mouth of the Amazon River along with a Greenpeace boat to try to catch these organized crime people that were illegally logging mahogany and then floating it down the river. And that's when he got shot in defense of his crew. So these were very serious oceanographic people. I'd like to mention my beautiful friends at Stranded No More, who are a coalition of marine biologists based in somewhere in Hawaii now. But they do very amazing work on behalf of cetacean reality in terms of monitoring stranding events all around the world and correlating them with seismic testing, hazardous military industrial operations, and with almost every stranding event that happens, these correlations are there. They also spend a lot of energy documenting the basic failure of the whole Western cetacean rescue operations. How it's much easier and likely for a stranded whale or dolphin to be euthanized than it is to be rescued in the West. It seems like the most successful rates of cetacean rescue are in this sort of less developed countries where it's not an industry. Stranded No More creates these brilliant sort of graphic map chart images that show all this information. I'd like to mention my friend Douglas Webster, Douglas Dolphinus, who lives on the Big Island of Hawaii. And I'd like to thank him for his ongoing support. He hosts my website on his website called DolphinMatrix.com. He's spent decades swimming with dolphins there off of the Kona area and works with this woman named Joan Ocean and other whale and dolphin people there. I've done a couple of interviews with him. I'd like to thank my friend Kaitiaki Moana Glenn Edney of New Zealand, who I met a few months ago. And I've interviewed him, I think, 4 times. He and his wife, Janie, are doing some very brilliant work. And he's got his book published, and they're sort of launching a new dimension of their work now through this. It's a website called Patreon. I haven't checked it out yet, but I'll put a link on this posting where you can support his work financially. But they're doing some very important work, I think, focusing on the plastic issue a lot lately. Not last, second to last, but way up there in importance. is my friends, Dr. Terry, Mr. Limpet Lilly, and Stuart the Effect Simonson, who I've been interviewing them a lot over the past few months. Terry's a marine biologist and underwater photographer in Hawaii, and Stuart is a chemical engineer working in Atlanta, Georgia. But they've worked together and independently to monitor the effects of microwaves and electromagnetic radiation, especially in the marine environment and shipping lanes and the electrification of the hulls of boats. And Terry spent massive amounts of energy documenting the effects of the U.S. Navy's microwave installation on Kauai and how it killed off all the corals there. But then when they stopped doing it, the corals have come back. But now, apparently, the military's back in full force on Kauai, even worse than ever, because of the Pacific pivot. And Terry reckons that they're now going to turn Hawaii into an offensive missile-based facility. So it's just all of the military-industrial civilization stuff is just running off the rail. But these guys are doing some very important work and gradually carving out a niche to get this information onto the radar of the people that are pretty much obsessed with climate change as being the cause of everything. Now, last, and probably by orders of magnitude, the most important guardian of Mother Ocean to me and one of my biggest heroes of all time is the scientist, author, naturalist, Rachel Carson, who wrote three brilliant books about the ocean, Under the Sea Wind, The Sea Around Us, and At the Edge of the Sea, before she wrote her fourth book that really catapulted her into the limelight called Silent Spring, about the global pesticide scenario. But she has inspired me so much, and I don't know of anyone else that's been such a beautiful combination of scientist and someone who truly loves nature and understands the non-human world, and who has the ability to express these feelings and ideas in a truly literary format. And her messages from the 1950s and 60s are as relevant today as they ever were. That's probably pretty much all I have to say for this show. It's so nice to sit here listening to the sound of the ocean. It's ironic that this is a talk radio show and I spend so much time and energy trying to communicate about the limitations of our linguistic behavioral mode that we tend to stay on all the time. That's why I try to get in as much nonverbal talk radio as I can with music and the sounds of birds and whales and dolphins and nature and all her different forms. Music, the music of the spheres. Please go out and be with Mother Ocean, not only today and tomorrow, but every day if you can. Go and get wet. It's very soothing. When I take a shower, I try to go swimming in the ocean as soon as possible after my shower so I can have the salt water on my body rather than vice versa like most people do. The ocean is the ultimate solution. She really is a beautiful, beautiful being, and there's only one of her, one Mother Ocean on the whole planet. We can't really understand who and what she is. But she's the home to the vast majority of our family of life on Mother Earth. I don't have to go out on a boat to be with her. Especially not a boat that's chopping through the water with propellers. I admire people that go out in sailboats. But I like being on the water. but I don't have to. And I love the whales and dolphins, but I don't have to go out there and actually physically be with them to understand who they are, to be with them, to feel their energy and their presence, and to even to communicate with them in many kinds of ways. It is nice to be with someone that's your friend. But I think humans go to such extremes to put themselves in environments where, I'm not going to say that we don't belong there, but if you have to go to great technological extremes and expenditures of energy and resources in order to be somewhere, I'm not sure how much sense that makes from a truly ecological perspective. This is Jeff Weverson. Thanks for listening. Enjoy World Ocean Day. Try to live simply so that others may simply live. Constantly try to reprogram and re-navigate to your very highest path. Signing off for On the Brink Radio. Good day. This is a flute song for Mother Ocean and all our family of life in the ocean.
Oh. The Anti-Media Radio, your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV.